TGI Afternoons
with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
Sadon swings and misses. He's gone. The ball game is over. The Red Sox drop 2 of 3 in San Diego. Oh, what might have been out west. The Red Sox totally frustrated. A series, a game decided by 2 or 3 moments that did not go their way.
A nightmare for the Red Sox.
Our guy, Will Fleming, a little disappointed in the Red Sox losing 2 of 3 out in San Diego. Not what you're looking for. Lose a series. Nope. Now you're headed to Houston, which has won a couple series since you took care of the Astros last week. So as it seems to be the case, that goes with the job title. If you want to be an ace, you want to be a pig, you want to be a beast. Garrett Crochet trying to play the role of stopper. But there's, you know, we've had some concerns seep back into the Boston Red Sox of late. One of them, I would say, is the fact that they're striking out a ton again. I know we've belabored this point all year long. I just think they give themselves such a good chance to win baseball games when they put the ball in play. It really is that simple.
No, why does it have? It's like with the Patriots crossing sports. Pardon me. But like, hey, you block for the quarterback and don't turn the ball over. Guess what? You're going to be in the majority of those games and even probably win more than you lose. When it comes to the Boston Red Sox, don't give up 5 runs in the first inning and then don't strike out 16 freaking times. Guess what? You're probably going to be in the game. If not, give yourself a better than average chance to win the game. If I told you before the weekend, Andy, that the Red Sox were going to score a little over 5 runs a game average over the whole weekend, because they scored 16 runs total, so 5 1/3 runs over the weekend. What would you have said they would have went?
2-1.
Yeah, same.
They didn't. They went 1-2.
Nope.
They had now the strikeouts, and we did have, we've talked about this on and off, Dan Ball, that they're like an SID director's, I guess it's redundant, Andy, it's sports information director, dream, because they have all these random numbers and stats, and Dan Ball's latest is, Red Sox had 13 strikeouts and no extra base hits. The third time that the Red Sox have done that this season, there's only been 31, 32 such games this year, and teams are 1-31 in those games. So it's pretty simple. Strike out a lot, don't get any extra base hits, you're going to lose the baseball game. Interestingly, the Giants are the only team that has a win there, and not exactly sprinting toward the postseason. The other thing is the pitching's been inconsistent. I know they're making moves in the bullpen. Actually, Dan Ball, have they updated all the roster moves they've made? Because I know there were names making the jump to the big league pen, but I didn't necessarily hear the corresponding roster moves.
No, they have not said who's going down. So Ali Sanchez, who's the catcher, is supposed to be activated tonight, and Giovanni Moran, the lefty. They designated Nick Birdie for assignment to open up a 40-man spot, but he was not on the active roster. So there are still 2 corresponding moves that have to happen, which makes you wonder, is a catcher? Is either Narvaez going on the IL? Is Wong being
something,
praying that he gets sent down? There's something else probably
Toro?
Significant to happen.
I can't imagine you're going to have 3 catchers on the roster right now, and one of them be Wong, who is not overly valuable,
good,
seemingly.
Yeah,
I was trying to be
probably
nice.
Not Wong
I was trying
for the
to
roster.
Oh, come on.
Fitzy, what'd you toss in there about Toro?
The fact that Abraham Toro has been hitting terribly for the longest time.
For the longest time.
I'd be curious about that. Yeah, it seems like the magic has kind of run out.
Yeah, Dan, we have we talked about this an age ago, and we did mention it last week in our weekly Wednesday chat with Alex Cora about how the guys like Toro and Romy Gonzalez and some of the unsung, unheralded contributors to the team have been responsible for keeping their head above water and more wins than not. Well, sometimes you start keeping these guys out there too long, running them out there in the nine, and you start getting diminishing returns. I think the pumpkin has formed around Abraham Toro at this point. He's not getting it done. He's hitting 200 for the last month plus. That's kind of the reality of who he is and why he was available to you.
And there's a couple of starting pitchers over the last couple of days who we've been wondering, how good are they? Are they really a 2 and a 3 behind Crochet? Yesterday, Bayo, not a great start. And Saturday, Was I dozing off after a couple Miller Lights, or did Giolito just fall apart and it was walk, walk? Was it four straight walks? That
four
I
straight walks before
Quattro
he got yanked.
Walkos.
That is not good. That is.
Yeah, no.
How about you mix in a strike somewhere?
How about my guy Walker Buehler on Friday night, though, huh?
Yeah, he well,
that was good.
But see, that's no disrespect to him or you, Fitzy, but I don't care. The bigger issue for me is that you were trying to talk yourself into Bayo and Giolito, and you have three starting pitchers. Mm-hmm. And if you have three guys you can kind of lean on, can you figure out the rest? Now,
gotcha.
if you're going to tell me Giolito at any time could walk four straight guys, which is horrifically bad for a major league pitcher who I said the dumbest thing ever.
Well, he's basically been crochet since June 10th or whatever the date was. 203 ERA. They're the same guy. They're not the same guy.
Because the next time Crochet walks four guys in a row will be when he turns in his Major League Baseball like active player card and just walks off.
Yeah, no, it wasn't great. And then how about on Saturday? Yeah, look, when you're 2-3, pitch like a 2-3, it's great. And it gives you the kind of confidence to, I don't know, not execute a blockbuster trade at the trade deadline for a possible auxiliary number 2/number 1 starter, hold on to your guys and say, I think we have a big three. And then when they start pitching like a 4 and a 5 or a 5 and a see you in AAA, then you start getting angst and agita and worrying and wondering about how the hell you're going to get through it. And then you see games like Saturday. They lose 5-4, very winnable game. You out-hit the Padres, 9-7. But the Padres kind of come at you, Andy, with a, dare I say, Tampa Raysian effort of Michael King for 2 innings, doesn't really have it. So then you get Peralta, then Estrada, then I don't even know how you pronounce this guy's name. Then your boy Mason Miller comes in, gets 3 strikeouts and 4. Like they basically 7 guys. It was La Russa like. It was Tampa Bay Rays esque. You basically treated your starter who flubbed the bed like an opener, but they got it done. That's winning games that the Padres want to and need to win to qualify for the playoffs. And I'm, you know, when Cora missed a game because of his daughter's graduation party, the bench coach went after it like that as well. Are we going to start seeing more efforts like that as they treat every game as must win?
Well, this is the part of the season where I do think, and Cora's talked a little bit about this, whether it's Crochet or some of the other decisions, like it's not cutting time. It is time to decide what you're doing, and winning baseball games is a priority, and everything's in front of them. I'm like, I don't want people to take this as some the sky is falling because you lost 2 to the Padres reactionary segment here on WEEI Afternoons.
Well, you got a quarter of the season left. That's it.
You'd been winning at an unrealistically high rate. You were due to lose a series. I think, what'd you say, Dan Ball? First back-to-back losses since July 21st and 22nd.
Yeah.
Okay. So you were cruising.
Against non-playoff teams, predominantly. Let's also call a spade there.
When did you become the negative one on this show?
I'm just being realistic about what I'm watching.
Learning from you, Dad!
They're a good baseball team that have lost series in the last month against their peers. That's what I see.
But do you see a baseball team, are there warts getting exposed or going to get exposed? Like, are you growing more concerned, or is this, okay, so Bayo had a bad outing. He's not Crochet. He's not Joe Ryan, but he's good enough. Like, where do you kind of on that longer-term view of some of the reasons you have been a good baseball team?
The Giolito thing specifically is something that I think is going to be exposed because he didn't pitch at all last year.
Yep.
So there's a good chance in my mind that he's now had 3 bad starts in his last 5. There could be a breakdown there. So for me, you kind of have 2 starting pitchers who you can trust. And to your point about Toro, Fitzy, you preached that the platoon option was going to be the right one, but when you're platooning guys who are consistently AAA or quadruple A players, they're not going to be able to sustain that for a full season. So I look at the Padres as a team that was almost the exact same record as the Red Sox. That's a team that added at the deadline, and their deadline additions are the reason they won that series.
Yep.
About the bullpen and the guys that they supplemented with. The Red Sox are a team that did nothing, and I just don't think they have the depth when I look at them against the best teams in baseball.
I think that's a fair question. I don't know that I'm there yet because I think this team ebbs and flows, and we've talked a lot about the vibes, and I do think they're an emotional team. I think they ride some emotion sometimes, and I think even the pitchers ride some emotion when they can get them an early lead and they can play from in front, and there's a certain buzz in the, because Cora always says it, buzz and excitement with a baseball team comes from the offense. That's where it comes from. And I think this is an emotional baseball team, which is basically saying you need the offense to score runs, be, you know, an exciting factor to kind of permeate the rest of the team. But yeah, there's some of this that's going to be a reaction to the trade deadline, to what Breslow did or didn't do in terms of a real starter, not a Dustin May, but like the first thing he talked about. We can't forget what he talked about. I'm not using anyone else's words against him. I'm going to use Craig Breslow's words against him. He said, we don't want to just add a pitcher for the sake of adding a pitcher. We want to add a top-of-the-rotation guy we can pencil in behind Garrett Crochet. And then you know what they did, Fitzy?
They kind of added a pitcher for the sake of adding a pitcher, and they overpaid for him, and he stunk in his first outing.
At the last minute. It was like 5:55, and they're like, oh, crap, we better just add somebody at this point. So I'm just going by Breslow's own words. He had some doubts about the rotation. He thought they needed a higher-end rotation guy, and come to find out, he might have been right. And some of us were getting a little too optimistic and putting a little too much belief maybe in Bayo and Giolito, but that can change in a heartbeat. We know how that is. All of a sudden, they win their next two starts. Crochet does his job, and you feel like you got three starters again. I do think the bullpen is also an issue as they continue to move pieces around back there. Hicks is also a guy. Jordan Hicks, I feel like, is a made man in one sense, but I don't feel like he should be a made man at all because he has not been good for this baseball team. But I don't know if he's going anywhere. They clearly wanted him. He was part of the Devers deal. They already got rid of part of the Devers deal. I don't know how much further you could go with that. So I think the bullpen and Jordan Hicks are also a discussion point.
Most def. And I'll ask again, A, are we going to see Kyle Harrison sometime soon? And B, do we get a Toley call up sometime soon because they need an injection of life, heat, and power from AAA? I mean, that's what Worcester's there for.
Yeah, if Toley is what you're counting on down the stretch, that seems a little bit unfair to, I don't know, Toley and the whole team and the fan base and Dan Ball, who one texter already yelled at Dan Ball. Dan Ball, Jesus, do you enjoy watching baseball or you just complain as much as possible when it doesn't go your way?
I love baseball. It's my favorite sport to watch.
You're starting to get Andy Hart-like reactions on the text line. You've made it. I'm so proud.
Father and son.
I'm just watching a team that I don't trust. Sorry, guys.
617-779-7.
Cut me some slack.
7937. Are you worried about the Boston Red Sox? Couple losses in the row for the first time in a few weeks. Couple questionable performances by your number two and number three starter. Little bit of chinks in the armor, as they say, and we'll see where that goes moving forward. Up next, though, we need to talk about a bigger picture issue that popped up during the weekend. Alex Bregman. He has an opt-out in his contract. He has had conversations, or Boris has had conversations about an extension. Now he's doing what they all do. Oh, we'll talk about it at the end of the year. No, we'll talk about it next here on WEEI Afternoons.
You're listening to WEEI Afternoons with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
Full count to Bregman. Here's the pitch, and it is swung on and driven high and deep into left center field. It is back. It is out of here. He does it again. Alex Bregman is ridiculous.
I like when we rejoin with some happy Will Fleming, not the sour, dour Will Fleming that we had last segment. That was a call of Alex Bregman, who has been pretty ridiculous for the Red Sox. He has been a great player for them this season. He has changed the defense. He has changed the clubhouse. He's been a key factor, probably one of the most consistent offensive factors in the lineup when he's actually healthy, other than the injury. But now we have some discussion of his contract, Fitzy, which, if you recall, three-year deal, $40 million a year, but opt-outs, so it could be a one-year deal. And we had, what was that, in Anaheim earlier this year where Boris was there and was like, yeah, we'd like to do a long extension, blah, blah, blah. Now, Tim Healy, the Boston Globe, writes, Alex Bregman wants to wait until after the season to talk contract extension. Quote, obviously, we're open to talking when the season is over, Bregman told the Globe. But for the next few months, I'm really just focused on baseball. Believe him? I mean, didn't Alex Cora tell us he wasn't talking about his contract last year, and then Alex Cora signed a three-year, $21 million extension? Isn't that how all this works? No. Oh, yes.
Yeah, how many times do we have to hear this to understand that that's exactly what he's trying to do? This is posturing right now. Oh, I'm focused. Like, and when he does that, you know what that's supposed to do? That's a message to his manager, to his teammates, and especially to ownership. Like, look at me. I'm a good. This is how everybody should handle their business. You're just gonna focus. I don't care about your previous misgivings and deals that you butchered with guys like Bogarts. I'm gonna, you know, give you guys all the faith and slack you need. But right now, my job is to help this team win baseball games, and I'm going to focus on that first, and then we'll see what my value is, both in the short and long term. It's very governmental. It's very political, and that doesn't surprise me coming from a guy like Bregman, who seems to know how to work a room, be it a dugout, a meeting room, or the press room as well.
Well, you don't want to be a distraction. Certainly not coming off a bad weekend.
And he had four hits this weekend. A lot of other guys did not.
Yep. I think he's as solid a hitter as they have a consistent. For a team that has a lot of streaky guys, he seems to be a pretty stable force. Along with Roman Anthony with his walks is a guy that gets on base with some regularity. A few strikeouts the other night when I was watching that I didn't love from Roman Anthony. But, those two guys at the top of the order are key. You're right. I think in part Alex Bregman is saying, I don't want to be a distraction. I don't want to, you know, not put myself before the team. I also don't hate the idea of just waiting. I mean, the guy just did have a random non-contact muscle injury that cost him a bunch of games. He's had it previously. Let's just wait to see how the year plays out, because I just don't know. The market wasn't great for Alex Bregman last year. Is the market going to just suddenly explode this year? And if he's a man of his word and he wants to be here, which he has said, he wants to be here long term, and they want him here long term, there's really no rush, right? You guys can negotiate as mature, honest, loyal sides in the offseason. Like, you're not just going to be like, well, season's over. You didn't sign me, so now I'm out of here. I'm going to be a free agent. Go sign with Detroit for...
Take that good faith and suck it. Like, yeah. No.
So I don't have a problem with this waiting till the offseason. I also think it is much ado about nothing, because if they came to him tomorrow and said, here's 6 years, $180 million or whatever, he would say, thank you. I will sign that now, and we can talk about nothing after the season because I'll be here for six more years. Like, that's just the way it's worked in years past.
It's crazy to think when he signed that three-year, $120 million deal, many of us thought, wow, what an overpay. That's crazy the Red Sox would go that far over their skis to secure the services of this guy that Alex Cora thought was an absolute must for his team. And he's been worth it, even having missed a quarter of the season with his quad injury. But to think that somebody would opt out of $80 million guaranteed and pursue something that could be 2 to 2.5 times that just because of the worth that he's accumulated over the course of the year, to me, is crazy. Like, it's gotten so out of hand. It's so stratospheric at this point. Like, I can't even comprehend. And he's going to get it. I don't know where the hell else that he would get it. His greatest value, Andy, I'll say this. Alex Bregman's greatest value lay with the Red Sox.
Yes, yes. And I think he's going to be here. It's going to really surprise me. Imagine the kick in the nuts that'll be. Joe Ryan's not here, and then Bregman Lee. Like, these things that I think are foregone conclusions may not end up being such, but we did get one texter that I do want to clarify. The 805 says, who is going to pay him more than $40 million per year? I don't think anybody's going to pay him more than $40 million per year. The question is, on a longer-term deal at a slightly lower average annual value, how much are teams willing to invest total? You said it. He's got $80 million on the books. If he can get $200 million on the books or $180
million, more than 80.
Right. And even if it's, you know, $34 million a year or wherever the number comes in at, I think he would take the total of that. And he has mentioned, and I don't know if this is player speak or not, wanting to have stability and security and kind of know where he's going to be for the long term. And I'll take him at his word that he wants that he wants a good, stable team and playing environment. Well, you're not going to be any happier, in my opinion, than playing for Alex Cora. You seem to love Alex Cora. Alex Cora loves you. The young guys love you, right? We've had these discussions about how the veterans and the young guys like Anthony and Marcelo Meyer are clicking. Seems like you got a pretty good thing going on here. Seems like they should find a way to make this a long-term relationship.
Question on the floor, though. You see other teams be more aggressive at the trade deadline. You heard and saw things about Red Sox management and ownership prior to the season. Then they get a little frisky in the preseason. Get Crochet, Chapman. All right, we're doing business the way it used to get done around here. Here we go. Then you get to the trade deadline. Matt's America and Dustin may not start again for the Red Sox? Like, did the way that they approach the deadline potentially skew the way Bregman and his management team thinks about the Sox?
I mean, I guess it could. I wouldn't think that would be the case. You know, did he think he was getting Joe Ryan when he took the photos with Crochet and Joe Ryan at the All-Star game? Probably. That seemed where it was trending. Seemed like everybody, internally, externally, everybody was predicting that that might happen. So was there some disappointment there? Sure. But is it to the point like, oh, I don't trust them anymore. They're not trying to win. I want to go someplace where they're actually trying to win. I mean, they just signed Roman Anthony to a long-term contract. They're doing certain things that would indicate, I mean, the Crochet deal came. The contract came after Bregman signed. So that's in his tenure here, that's an example. And hell, he may even look at the Devers thing and be like, wow, that was one of the boldest moves trying to win that I've ever seen. That guy was a pain in the ass in the clubhouse. I know good clubhouses, and we didn't have one when he was here. They're into it long term. They're giving up a great talent to try to win. So, no, my guess is no. This is just about Scott Boras and posturing and agents doing their thing and trying to get
annoying.
Yeah, but you would love to have him as your agent if he was getting you a lot of money, right? So, Scott Boras, if you're available, Fitzy would like to talk to you about his next contract. Yep. Up next here on WEEI Afternoon, something else Fitzy would like to talk about. Efton Chisholm,
yeah.
Travion Henderson, the Patriots rookie class, and everything that was the updates in terms of competition and depth charts from Friday night's preseason opener against Washington. Little football talk here on WEEI Afternoons. Up next.